Welcome to Shiur and Ibn Ezra Parshas Bamidbar. I wanted to start off speaking about Ibn Ezra and some of the other Mefarshim with regard to the topic introduced at the beginning of Perek Beis and Bamidbar, namely the topic of the Degolim, the banners or flags, which the Torah describes as being attributed to the various Shvatim. Chalki says, "Vaydavar Hashem Moshe v'Aharon l'amar, Ish al ziglo v'osos v'dei favosam." Each person should be placed or arranged together with his degel, with his banner, with his flag, but also with certain signs. But they saw in accordance with the houses of the forefathers, Yachan of Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael should encamp, again using these banners or these flags as indicators of the various parts of the camp. There seems to be a very basic debate going back to the Midrashim, as we'll see in a few moments, but carried through into the Rishonim, as to how many Degolim there actually were. How many flags or banners were there in actuality? So, if you look at Rashi on Pasuk Beis, on the word Be'osos, you know, with signs, writes that Kol Degel Yi'os Ma'ot Tzvua Tzvuya Alof. Each degel had a certain sign, namely a colored canvas that was on this flag. Tzva'o shel zeh, lo kitzva'o shel zeh, and the color of each flag was different than the color of the other flags. And sheva kol echad ki gavan avno hakvua b'choshen. The color of each flag corresponded to the color of each shevet stone, each tribe stone that was embedded in the choshen, in the breastplate, which of course had 12 stones, each one corresponding to the 12 shvatim. We talk kach yakir kol echad es diglo, and since each degel had the unique color associated with the stone and in turn associated with the shevet that it was connected to, so each shevet will recognize in a very, very quick fashion where they're supposed to be surrounding the Mishkan of the Olam HaMoed. How many stones were there in the Choshen? 12. So the simple chat in Rashi seems to imply that there were 12 Degolim, right? That there were 12 flags, each flag corresponding to a different stone in the Choshen. In other words, each Shevet had its own flag. The source for this Rashi is the Medrash Tanchuma, and it's also echoed in the Bamidbar Rabbah. The Bamidbar Rabbah, to a large extent, is the Tanchuma. The Bamidbar Rabbah, at some length in Perek Beis, goes through the various different shvatim and describes what this flag of each shevet looked like. Right? So it's clear, one looks in the Medrash, and again Rashi presents it in a capsulated form, but it seems that Rashi is simply working off the Medrash, that there are 12 degolim, there are 12 flags, one for each shevet. Truth be told, if you look at the psukim themselves, you get a somewhat different impression. Right? The psukim read as follows. Chachonim kedma mizracha, those who were encamped on the eastern side of the Mishkan, degel machane Yehuda l'tzivosam, there was the flag or the banner associated with Yehuda, and then it goes on to describe a little bit about the shevet of Yehuda. Vachonin alav, mate Yisachar, next to Yehuda was encamped Yisachar, and then mate Zvulun, right next to Yisachar, and Yehuda was encamped Zvulun. No mention of a degel with regard to Yisachar and Zvulun. The only mention of a degel was with regard to Yehuda. We keep reading the psukim. Degel machane Reuven teimano v'tzivosam. The degel of Reuven was on the southern side, and vachonim alav mate Shimon. Next to Reuven was Shimon, and umate God. Next to Reuven and Shimon was God. Again, the only mention of a degel is with regard to Reuven, not with regard to Shimon and God, the other two shvatim that are adjacent to Reuven. And that's the way the pattern of the psukim continues. The simple pshat of the psukim seems to be that there are four divisions. Now, there's an eastern flank, a western flank, a northern flank, and a southern flank, each one composed of three shvatim, and each of those flanks has a single degel. In other words, the sum total of the golem was not 12, as would be indicated in Rashi, but rather 4. That seems to be the simplest interpretation of the sukkim. And truth be told, if you look at Rishonim other than Rashi, at least some of the Rishonim working off of Midrashim seem to understand that all there were 4 degolim. In other words, there were 4 quadrants of the camp. Each quadrant had its own degel, but it was not the case that every shevet had its own degel. The Chizkuni, by way of example, brings a fascinating medrash, which the notes point out is Sefer HaPlio, some unusual medrash. The Chizkuni writes that, you know, you see in the pasuk it says Al Diglo Be'Osos, right? That each of the flags had osos, had signs. What exactly were these signs? So the Chizkuni, based on this medrash, writes that the word osos in this context is to be understood as osios, as letters. And he presents the following fascinating interpretation of the Degolim. The Degolim are Yakosov osios shoshmosa avos. The Degolim contained the letters which spelled out the names of the avos of the patriarchs, says the Chizkuni. The Kesar hayuksuvos, so how were they written? The Degel Ruven Hayakosuv Aleph Yud Yud. Right? The flag of Ruven, right, had the letters Aleph Yud Yud. Not I, even though that would be a perfectly Jewish thing to say, right? But Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Sheni, the second flag, Beis Sadi Ayin. In other words, the second letter of each of the Avos names. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? So you have the Beis Sadi Ayin. The Shlishi Rochak, right? The third Degel has the third letter of each of the Avos names, right? Resh for Avraham, Ches for Yitzchak, and Kof for Yaakov. And the Revi Makav, the fourth Degel had the fourth letter of each of the Avos names, Mem, Kuf, and Beis respectively. Now again, just to point out, if you've been keeping track, that there's a little bit of a problem with this, in that Yitzchak and Yaakov each had 4 letters, but Avram has 5 letters. Okay, so the way the Medrash understands it is that the name that was spelled out for the first of our Avos was Avram, his original name, not Avraham. There was a missing hay. So then it comes out, all of the Avos have 4 letters in their names. Each of the Degolim has one of the letters in turn of the names of the Avos. Thus, you know, each of the Degolim put together spell out the 3 of the Avos, right? The Ha'anan Hayim Sake Hau Yisrael Kemin Hei to Avraham, and the cloud of glory covered over the Jewish people from up on top, that represents the Hei of Avraham Avinu, which was removed from the Degolim themselves. There's a fascinating interpretation that the Degolim are meant to symbolize the connection that Chal Yisrael have with the Avos, but one thing you clearly see from the Chizkuni is assuming that there are 4 flags. Right? Because the whole, you know, the whole interpretation doesn't go anywhere if you're assuming 12 flags, right? So it seems to be a clear contradiction or a difference of opinion between Rashi on the one hand and the Chizkuni on the other hand. Just how many flags did they have exactly? Right? In other words, a very basic question in understanding the Sukkim. So Ibn Ezra himself, again, this is an Ibn Ezra shiur, right? So, just we start with Rashi and the Chizkuni, but the Ibn Ezra himself also seems to interpret, doesn't interpret, that the number of the Golan is 4 and not 12, which, again, shouldn't surprise us so much because it's because the Ibn Ezra is a Pashtun, right? He's very, very much tied and interested to the simple pshat of the Pesukim. And again, as we pointed out, it would seem that the simplest way to read the Pesukim is that there are 4 flags and not 12. But the Ibn Ezra, working with that assumption, puts forward a fascinating understanding of the flags and what they represented, and it gives us a very interesting insight as to what these flags are supposed to mean symbolically in terms of the organization of the Machane Yisrael. So, but also, she writes, Simonim hayu b'chol degel v'degel. Right, as opposed to the Chizkuni, he said that the word also, that there were signs on each of the flags. Signs means letters, right, that the osios, the letters of the names of the avos, were contained upon the flags. Says Ibn Ezra, no, osios doesn't mean osios. If it wanted to write osios, it would have said osios. Right, osios means simonim, it means symbols. Right, symbols with an S. Right, so what are these symbols? The Kazmonenu Amru. Chazal, the early ones told us, right, and the notes of Ibn Ezra point out that this is a Medrash Lechachto, so the same way that Rashi had his Medrash, Ibn Ezra has his Medrash, right, so again, the issue of how many flags there were seems to go back to the Midrashim, right, it's just reflected in the Rishonim. The Kadmonenu Amru, Shahayu Dego Ruven Suras Adam, Mikolach Dirash Dudoim. Right, that the flag of Reuven had the image of a human being upon it, and that's related to the idea of the Dudoim. The Dudoim, we know, was some kind of herb. People often can translate as mandrakes, you know, some kind of herb that we know Reuven brought back to his mother back in Parshas Vayetze, you know, which led to a whole give and take between Rachel and Leah. Chazal tell us that the Dudoim, this herb or this root, had the form of a human being. So in other words, this flag of Reuven had the form of a human being slash the Dudoim. Well, the Devil Yehuda Suras Aryeh, on the flag of Yehuda there was the form of a lion. He bowed him Shilo Yaakov, because Yaakov Avinu, when he blesses Yehuda at the end of his life, he says, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Yehuda is a lion cub. Of the Degel Reuven Suras Shor, the town of the Chor Shor, on the flag of Ephraim, right, so there was the image of an ox, because we know as well that Yaakov Avinu compares Yosef, the father of Ephraim, to an ox, the Chor Shor Hadar Lo, of the Degel Don Suras Nesha. On the flag of Don, the last of the four flags, was the image of a Nesher. A Nesher is variously translated as an eagle or some other type of, you know, mighty and glorious bird. You know, some say it's a vulture, some say it's neither, but whatever it is, it's some kind of very, very spectacular bird. You know, the king of the birds, the Nesher. Not clear that Ibn Ezra does not state, you know, why Don should be associated with a Nesher, but that's what he says. So when we have these four flags, that's Ibn Ezra. So the image upon each of them, in turn, is that of a human being, a lion, an ox, and an eagle. So you'll ask, what is the significance of that exactly? So says the Ibn Ezra, I'll tell you. Hashidamu lakruvim shiro yechezko hanovi. If you think about it, that's exactly analogous to the Kruvim that were seen by Yechezkel HaNavi in the very beginning of Sefer Yechezkel. Here we can tie together our weekday shir with our Shabbos shir, right? If you recall, those were part of the Shabbos shir in Yechezkel. So when Yechezkel sees the Maisa Merkava, this view of the chariot, which again is going to be the Haftarah, the first morning of Shavuos, so the Pasuk in Yechezkel describes how Yechezkel sees an image of a chariot, which Kivyachol is bearing the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and there are various creatures on each corner of the chariot. Each of the creatures has four faces. What are the four faces of these creatures, these malachim? So the Pasuk in Yechezkel tells us that the four faces were that of a man, a lion, an ox, and an eagle. Right? So exactly those four faces were represented by the four Degolim. Again, there are only four Degolim, according to Ibn Ezra. The Machane Yisrael is meant to pattern the Maisa Merkava as seen by Yechezkel. So writes to Ibn Ezra. The imagery, the symbolism of that, is a very, very beautiful symbolism. because essentially, it would seem, Vanessa doesn't speak the sex part out, but I think it's just the logical derivation of what he's saying. The symbolism of the Degolim is, you, Klal Yisrael, are like the Malachim of Hashem in this world. Just as in the celestial realms, the Merkava, the chariot, which represents the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is borne by Malachim. In other words, the Malachim are the agents to help disseminate the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the glory of God. So too, down in this world, Klal Yisrael represents those Malachim. Klal Yisrael serves the role of being the bearers of the chariots of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, what's in the middle of the Machaneh Yisrael? It's nothing else than the Ohel Moed itself, so to speak, the Merkava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. And it's the four flanks, the four quadrants of the Machaneh Yisrael who are bearing that glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu wherever they go, and that's represented by the four different Degolim, you know, on each of the four sides of the Machaneh Shechina, of the camp that has the Olam Moed, and ultimately the Aron, which is right smack in the middle of the Machaneh Yisrael. Right, so it's an incredibly powerful image that the Ibn Ezra shares with us based on the Medrash. These Degolim are not just a way of locating where you're supposed to be if you get lost. Not just look for the onyx-colored flag and you'll find your way back to where you need to go. These Degolim really represent the mission of what Klal Yisrael is supposed to accomplish here on Earth, and are supposed to remind us that we, Klal Yisrael, are supposed to be like Malach. Right? So it's an incredible thing to think about. Again, I think it's just tremendous Musar Ashkafu, however you want to term it exactly, as we go into Shavuos, that the Degolim, which on the surface just seemed like a very, very technical kind of presentation, the way the Chumash puts it forward, that the Golem are actually symbolic of the mission of Klal Yisrael here on Earth to be, to be bearers of the chariots of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to try to bring and disseminate His glory as far as we possibly can. Right? So that's just, for starters, a little insight from the Ibn Ezra. Let me shift gears a little bit, and we'll speak about another Ibn Ezra that has bearing, I think, on this period of the Sefirot HaOmer, beginning with Perek Daled. So the pasuk says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe v'Yalar Meimar, Nafsa Esrosh Ne'kahos Bitof B'nei Levim Nishpachosom Avei Slavosom." You should conduct the census of the Levim, starting with the B'nei Kahos. "Yidem Shloshim Shana V'Malo." You should count the Levim from the ages of 30 to the ages of 50. Right? In other words, the census of the Levim is considerably different than the census of the rest of Klal Yisrael, where they were counted from the age of 20 and up. Here the Levim are counted from 30 to 50. What's the significance of 30 to 50? So Rashi over here writes that Menei Mehem is Faroim Lavodas Masa. The whole point is to count the Levim who can do heavy labor, who can carry the clay on Mikdos. Mehem is an explosive the Adem Chamishim Shana. When can he do hard physical labor? Basically between the ages of 30 and 50. Hatachos Mishloshim on Ismale Kocho. You see from here that until you're 30, you're not really strong, right? Your full strength comes at the age of 30. And he says, we can't honor this Rashi quote. This is the source of what Chazal saying Pirkei Avos, right? We read it just, this past Shabbos. Then Shloshim L'Koach, right? When a person becomes 30, that's when he has, full strength. Vayosha Ben Chavishim Kocho Machish Me'atha. But once you get past 50, you're over the hill. Right? Basically, from 30 to 50, you have Koach. After 50, it's all downhill from there. Some would say after 31, it's all downhill from there. It depends how you look at it. Right? But that's not the answer to the focus. From 30 to 50, you can schlep, you can do, you can accomplish. After 50, all right, you're pushing it already. Now, Rashi perhaps would advocate for retirement at the age of 50. could be that not so many of us would argue with that if that was indeed enforced. The Ibn Ezra writes something somewhat similar, but with a somewhat unique twist. So he writes on the same pasuk, Ibn Shlosim Shana, Karov me arba shvuos. 30 years is sort of the equivalent of 4 weeks. And then Hamishim, Shiva Shavuos. And 50 is the equivalent of 7 weeks. Ki Oz Yechfar Kola Chaguf. After that, a person's strength begins to wane. So on one level, the basic gist of this Ibn Ezra is similar to Rashi. In other words, you know, from 30 to 50 are the prime years of a person's strength. Okay, that's the basic point is agreed upon. But the way the Ibn Ezra puts it is very, very interesting. 30 years is the equivalent of 4 weeks, and 50 years is the equivalent of 7 weeks. Clearly, the Ibn Ezra is engaging in some kind of analysis where a year of a person's life in some way corresponds to a day. Right? In other words, 4 weeks is 28 days, it's almost 30. Right? 7 weeks is 49, it's almost 50. Clearly, the Ezra is trying to draw some kind of parallel between, you know, the significance of days and the significance of years in a person's life. What exactly is that parallelism? So here the commentary writes that the Ibn Ezra is referencing an idea which we have in halacha. We know in halacha that a child is only considered to be fully viable halachically after the child has been alive for 30 days. That's what it is with the Ibn Ezra. Then, after 30 days, what is it about 30 days? Apparently, you know, the whole strength of the human being is, or, you know, the basic strength of the human being is realized after 30 days. The Ezra says there's a parallelism between the days and the years of a person's life. A person reaches a certain plateau of viability and strength after 30 days. And by the same token, a person reaches a certain greater plateau of strength and viability after 30 years. Right? And those, what happens in a day is somewhat analogous to what happens after years. Similarly, there's a certain degree of completion that happens after 50 days. So in a parallel sense, you've sort of maxed out your strength as a human being, at least your physical strength as a human being, after you hit 50 years. It's a very interesting comment because I think it sheds some light on the whole institution of Sefiras HaOmer. Paul says that there's 50 days between Pesach and Shavuos. So, you know, a simple answer might just be, well, you know, that's how it came out. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the Torah at the end of 50 days, and that's how it was. You know, don't try to read too much into it. It came from the Ibn Ezra. Again, it's always the Kashrut, the follow-up Kashrut. Okay, so why did Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, choose 50 days to be the point at which, after you see its Messiah, that the Torah was given? It would seem, according to the Ibn Ezra, that there's a concept that 50 days on some kind of, you know, basic fundamental level implies the idea of shleimus, of completion. Right? 50 days is a unit. You know, and 50 in general is the completion of a unit. That's how we have the Yovel year, which we read about, you know, last week's Ezra. The whole idea of 50 gates of wisdom, the idea of 50 gates of Tumah, Tahara, 50 is a number that implies completion on some level. So that's true in terms of counting Sefiras HaOmer, that after we count 50 days, we've reached a certain level of completion, we're ready. For Kabbalah HaTorah, we've achieved on some level what we need to achieve. And that's true in the life of a human being as well. After a person hits the year 50, right, so there's a certain degree of completion which the person has achieved already at that point. And a person's 50th birthday is apparently a significant one, you know, as we see in the Ibn Ezra. It's not just simply, you know, with regards to the Levian, because the physical strength begins to wane, but there's some aspect of completion that a person is able to achieve after 50 years. Okay, we'll start next week, Bezos Hashem. Probably we should learn Sunday or Monday night. I think we'll have to figure out which one. Go for Sunday night. Go for Sunday night. It's a bigger crowd. So we'll do Parshas Naso Sunday night, says Hashem, next week, and we'll pick up at that point. Here we come out of the Pastor Omer.